and then some sips afterwards. Anything we want to talk about before jumping into updates on sips?
Don't think so. Governance has been pretty quiet. I
Yeah,
have a feeling
beautiful,
people
mate.
are largely watching the markets.
I wouldn't mind discussing the effectiveness of that SIP that increased the penalties and lowered the time for liquidation.
Okay.
Do you want to do that first
Let's.
or?
No, I think we could probably get started with the other things first, and then we could probably touch on that later, because that's a long one.
I'll jump in. If we check GovCall chat, there's a screenshot here of the updates for the key SIPs. Priorities haven't changed. Get V3 out, improve atomic swaps, prepare for debt migration, and launch PERPS V2. First up, V2X, SIP 288 has been released. And now the job turns to tuning the fees across curve pools and synthetics fees. Afif, did you want to talk to the fact that SIP 288 is now out, and what direct integration means and what's coming up next?
Sure. Yeah. So I can give like kind of a. Oh, first, can people hear me? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess like an overview of the thought process with this is we want ultimately we want like regular flow. We want you to be able to open up one inch and do like $1 million trade or something. Obviously not trading, but just to look at it, and then we want to see a significant portion of that read through synthetics. We're not there yet, but like this is how we get there. So initially, we're using the 30 basis point Uniswap pool as an oracle. And I know these are a lot of more technical details than people want to discuss. We all just want it to work and generate big volume numbers right away. But we'll get there within hopefully the next week or two. Please don't meme me. But yeah, so we're starting with the 30 basis point pool because the fees from the curve side, as Kath mentioned, are still and the slippage when the curve pulls is still large, where we want to make sure the synthetic side is significantly is larger enough by amount, so it makes economic sense for us. And then a lot of the flow that we're going to be getting, unfortunately, at this size, is going to be when there's a slight deviation in the Uniswap pool. So even though where the fee is 35 basis points, a lot of the flow that will come through this will be when there's like a price deviation in the Uniswap pool by like 30 basis points. So effectively, the fee is like 5 or 10 basis points or something, let's say. Why can't we go straight to the 5 basis point pool? Because it doesn't make as much sense when $1 million order will have, like 6 or 7 bips of slippage in the two curve hops, which we're forcing it through, plus 4 bips of fees in each pool. It doesn't really make sense to go that low on our side without, the curve fees being comparable or ideally, twofold lower. So the path that Caleb and I are taking, and he's not here, so I'll just speak for him, in terms of analyzing this, is starting with the 30 bip pool, 35 basis point fees. We haven't seen really any bad flow yet. Walk the fees down maybe to like 25, analyze the type of flow we're getting, see if it's still generally soft flow. And that'll kind of validate, the direct integration model of, if we use one inch to force the flow through curve, do we mostly get more acceptable flow? And simultaneously, we're working with some folks in the curve community to get a governance proposal to lower the fees, hopefully to 2 basis points in each pool and double the amplification factors so that there's less slippage on the curve side to make it more amenable to lowering the fees on the synthetic side. And then when we switch to the 5 basis point Uniswap pool oracle, and the fees on our side are on the order of 5-10 bips, and then the curve fees and slippage is on the order of 4 or 5 bips, now it's starting to be something that's going to be routed through much more frequently. And it won't really take us that long to get there. most of the dependencies are going to end up just being going through the curve governance process, which hopefully won't take too long.
Thanks, Afif. Pause there for a minute for anybody to ask a question, because there's... I think that was pretty succinct, but there's probably quite a lot there.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a quick question, because I noticed there was a spike in percentage of the SNX fee by date being generated according to Gunboats' dashboard. It shot up to like 70% today, I assume, since the integration. In that respect, is that looking as expected?
Actually, the there was a lot. I think that fee came from, like, I saw a $4 million swap that somebody did on the SBTC pool. I don't even think it was through the 1inch integration. There was a couple large swaps like that yesterday. Like, we are getting more fee from 1inch, and, you know, perps volume is also down a bit. So that might be part of it, but we probably have to observe a little more. I would say it's not directly attributable. Like, I think it would be more balanced if not for a couple of those outlier swaps we saw yesterday. Probably during, like, you know, the volatility, it could have been related to, like, a liquidation transaction or something like that.
Okay, cool, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Afif. Always good getting the rundown on atomic swaps and how we're improving it. If there's no other questions, we can jump over to V3. Noah or DB, would you like to share the update?
Yeah, at a high level, with V3, we're just, the team is just like ripping through all the code and making sure it's ready for audit right now. And yeah, just making sure everything's buttoned up and ready to go. So making huge progress there. And we're also focused on the migration plan, and which I guess we'll be discussing in a bit, and making sure all the like edge cases there are covered and we're ready to move on that.
Thanks, Noah. With the plan being for December, the entirety of V3 will be in audit.
Yeah, that's right. The plan is beginning of December, we get an audit. And I mean, it's hard to estimate past that point, but we're thinking starting to roll out the migration plan. Assuming everyone's comfortable with what we're proposing, that could start as early as January. We're figuring, I mean, everything slows down through the holiday season, but I think end-to-end, a little over a month should be enough to process any audit feedback and get the ball rolling.
We can probably have some further questions during the SIP presentation when the migration plan is discussed. Great. Thank you, Noah. Talking about auditors, at the moment, the auditors are looking at all the SIPs for PERPS V2, 279, 280, 281, 285 in aggregate, in one big batch for PERPS V2. And the testnet deployment is in progress. Afif, do you want to add anything further?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's a succinct update, but it's pretty significant, right? Like, almost everything is code complete. Leo and David are working around the clock trying to ship this thing. Basically, all the features have been built in. If you want to, like you know, list through them, we have delayed orders, configuration for off-chain oracles, a separate exchange function with a whole host of circuit breakers has been added, and then all of the mechanism changes from 279. You know, premium discount and all the downstream changes that have to be made as a result in you know, slippage protection and liquidations, that's nearly done. I think the last thing is liquidations, but David and I chatted about that yesterday, and I think he's probably going to wrap it up this week. And then also the new funding rate model. And so, yeah, it's basically all going to be handed to the auditors next week. Leo did a deployment on a Tenderly fork, and now he's pretty close to getting it onto, I think he's going to deploy it onto Gurley, like either today, tomorrow, or early next week, so that Quenta can start looking at it. and the auditors have already started looking at it. So yeah, it's coming along really, really well. And we're still pretty optimistic about December.
Yeah, I think it's easy to, we've talked about perps so much and we've talked about them for quite a while. It's easy to forget how much of a transformative improvement this is hopefully going to be for our perps product. I'm increasingly excited and really happy with how development's gone recently. Very much looking forward to it internally. Very, very much.
Yeah. One other nice thing would be if Bedrock happens, you know, in December or January, and we have 2 second block times, that can improve the delayed order UX like, you know, fivefold right there, 5 to 10 fold, which means that it's like, it should be pretty good, like right off the bat, if you know, if this ends up, depending on the timing, if they end up aligning.
Doesn't sound like there's any further questions about Perps V2. That brings us, we can wrap. Troy's very excited. The Quenta team's very excited. Yes, agreed. So are we. Wrapping up, Staking V2, final QA is in progress and should be released over the coming days, synthetics. And an update on internally, CCC election completed with the same members, Afif and Ale and myself re-elected. I think that's the update from SIPS and work in progress. Yeah, we didn't have you there, Tara, to make sure it was all legitimate.
I demand in-person ballots.
Paper ballots. All right, I'm not hearing any questions about SIPs or work in progress. So I know we have the SIP presentations. Would you like to dedicate some time to some of the questions that we flagged at the beginning around fees? Change? Nana?
Yeah, so I was just hoping to understand how effective that SIP was. You know, basically, there were multiple reasons cited for executing that SIP. SIP-SACP. Well, so just want to get some idea of how effective it was, because the C ratio was one of the reasons cited for it being executed, and that seems to be hovering at about the same level as it was prior to this change going live.
Is Bojan able to speak to that? I see he's in the audience. Just because I know he was monitoring some aspects of the liquidation process.
Who? Sorry, you cut out.
Bojan.
Oh, is he? Is he here? Yeah, he is there. I mean, don't want to put him on the spot, but if he wants to come on stage, anybody is always welcome.
Yeah, in the meantime, maybe I can just point out one thing that I pointed out in the governance chat a little bit, but I'm not sure if it's been discussed too much, other than from Sam, who is you know, sometimes well-meaning, sometimes not. But one of the big reasons that I initially supported this is because if you look back at past liquidations, right, the liquidation rewards that are coming to stakers are locked for 1 year. And we have to assume, right, that stakers are going to apply some kind of discount to locked SNX versus liquid SNX that's coming in. So from my perspective, you look back at past liquidations, the vast majority of liquidations that have occurred already, stakers were forced to take on these locked tokens, and even with the prior liquidation penalty, are now underwater on what we have, what we forced them to take on, right? So, you know, I think the socialized liquidation mechanism is really difficult to compare to something like Aave, where liquidators are liquidating positions and then immediately just taking their fee and walking away. In this case, protecting stakers is not just protecting stakers who are underwater, who don't want to pay high liquidation penalties. It's also protecting stakers who are forced to take on that debt by giving them a deal where, you know, in a year's time, they're not going to be so far underwater that we've actually screwed our responsible stakers. So that's kind of one of my concerns that I'm looking at, that I feel like in this discussion about comparing it to Aave liquidation fees or something like that, really needs to be addressed and considered, that this, there are two sides here and both sides are stakers that we have to protect. So just wanted to throw that out there, and now we can move on, I guess, unless anybody has anything to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I get that perspective of trying to, you know, be protective of the stakers, but at the same time, when you make such changes, you are just harming the stakers who are underwater and who have reposed their faith in the system to charge them a certain percentage. And the changes are not small, right? When you're talking about the changes, they're nearly 100% and 50% respectively for the liquidation penalties. At the same time, you're cutting the time as well that they have for liquidating themselves, you know, the duration that they have. So, I mean, I don't see how this was a positive change for the system. A lot of stakers who are underwater are unrepresented or underrepresented because they've been shamed into, you know, not basically not speaking, and they always made to shut up. So I suppose even I was being assumed to be in that position, and I got a lot of flack for being in that position. Just in case someone was interested in my personal position, I was able to claim the rewards for last week as well as this week. That should be totally immaterial to the arguments being discussed. But just in case someone was curious about it, Kane also had similar views about the C ratio and penalties, but he was never subjected to such heat during the discussions. So I don't know. I think, you know, the diversity of opinions should be welcome rather than put pressure on people who don't, you know, follow the course that everyone's going through.
Diversity of opinions is absolutely welcome, but it has to be founded, because right now, if we're in a situation where we are just focused on people who are underwater because they are not managing their debt ratio, that means the entire system and everyone else is taking on that debt, which can ultimately lead to the entire downfall of this protocol. So it absolutely needs to be a balance, but that balance will always skew in favor of what keeps the protocol running, not degenerates maxing out their C ratio and being unable to pay it back, because we can't sustain that forever. That's not how the system works. The debt doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from everyone else in the system who's acting responsibly, and that should absolutely be our first priority, rather than people complaining they maxed out and can't claim their rewards.
I don't think we even saw a material change in the C ratio that was being cited as the reason for this. So I think this SIP is ineffective at best and, you know, harmful to stakers at worst.
So I guess I do have a direct question for you, Nana, because I do appreciate your input, but I kind of want to tackle this concern directly. So if the 45% penalty is too much, that also assumes that what would that be? Something like a 1/3 discount, approximately, is being applied to locked SNX that's going to responsible stakers. Do you think that discount is too much? What kind of discount do you think would be appropriate to pass them? Or alternatively, do you think we should do something other than pass this SNX along as staked? Like, do you think we should pass it along as liquid to get rid of this concern that SNX stakers are being forced to take on this debt without being given an appropriate discount on the collateral that they're getting?
Thanks, Bud. Yeah, so basically my opinion is that the changes that we made, they weren't urgent in you know, they, you couldn't reason that they were urgent. You saw the effect that it wasn't effective at all for the system to regain its health for the network. So this question of how much the penalty should be could have been debated. We could have talked about it. There have been extreme opinions, you know, some like Sam who point out and say it should be 100%. Some say it's too less. Some say it's too little. It's on the higher side. So this is something that we could have discussed. What this change did was it basically was detrimental for stakers who were struggling and who had a certain expectation from the system, and they were kind of let down by this change. So I
Bert
think we should have been more mindful.
Bert is trying to discuss it right now. He's not asking, was this a good change or not? He's asking your opinion, because you've denounced this change, on what you think those penalties and numbers should have been.
I think we should lacking in urgency.
Given that we had CCs observing inefficient liquidations occurring, when people are conducting self-liquidations, shifting debt onto the debt pool when they possess the funds to carry out a far more capital-efficient liquidation if they chose to.
So I just want to point out that this change was made after the volatility. Gauntlet never came up with such a change or these recommendations ever. They always recommended the same numbers as the previous ones, and I haven't really seen any change being suggested from their side. So if they are the ones in charge of our risk management, and you know, at least give us proper inputs based on that.
They're absolutely not in charge of our risk management.
I was meaning to say that
they are in charge of at least giving us inputs to consider, right? So it's a fair bit of the job to analyze such a situation and at least come up with very little changes, even if we are heading in that direction. But over the course of the past, few months maybe, they've come up with the same numbers repeatedly, again and again. So it's not that there was any indication of, too much risk being attributed to the system due to those parameters.
The input here that is very stark to me is that in a week of turmoil where one of the largest exchanges exploded in an absolute lack of collateral and prices were down 15 to 30% across the board, including in SNX, our C ratio remained flat, meaning we are taking the adequate amount of risk to make sure we are not exposed to black swan events that would collapse this system while the token price is down.
Yeah. The changes we made were post the volatility, so I don't even know. And
the volatility is still going on, Nana. It's been all week. That's just nonsense.
But,
we're not back above a $2 or $3.
You can take a look at the C ratio when the move was started, when this change came into effect, and now the C ratio that you can observe, it's hardly changed at all. So you can say this was ineffective at best.
No, that's the point.
It's
hardly changed at all.
It sounds like we could move on from this.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, fine.
It was a vote, and I think the majority has spoken on it, and we can continue to monitor it, but we have other things to talk about.
Fair enough. Okay. I just wanted to let everyone know, since nobody really cares about the underwater staker here, so I thought it was important to voice it. Let's move on to whatever else we need to discuss.
Was there anything we wanted to discuss before the V3 SIPs? Doesn't sound like it. Noah, will you be presenting the SIPs?
Yeah, I can start with an overview. I think DB and Aviv can also chime in, especially with any questions. Okay, let's see. So I'm going to put together a diagram with the support of Steve earlier today. I'm going to throw it in the Go Call chat. This is a little more up to date than the written SIP draft on the website, which I should still update. So I'm going to start there and apologize for having the liquidation C ratio wrong here. I just picked a round number. I previously picked a round number for the SNX price in a previous presentation and didn't hear the end of it. So anyway, yeah, so I guess the best way to approach this is I can sort of try to walk through this diagram top left to bottom right. And there's a lot of different components here, and it includes other SIPs as well. So yeah, feel free to chime in with questions, but I'll try to give an overview as best I can. So yeah, so for starters, at a high level, the idea here is we can launch the V3 system as a separate system, and then use V3 to back V2. And so the major benefit to doing the rollout in this way is that we can have a much more progressive migration, where we can stand up the V3 system, we can move collateral and staking positions and the staker experience into V3. All of the debt, all of the integrations that are currently deployed and issued by the V2 system should continue to be able to operate uninterrupted. So that's the main idea and upside here. I think this will drastically reduce the complexity of the migration process and also drastically reduce the risk. The alternative would look like keeping all of the old proxy addresses across all of the assets, because we wouldn't be able to differentiate whether debt was being issued from the V2 or the V3 system. It would be like sort of swapping out the entire bottom of the system that's currently interconnected with the V3 system. And so we would need to also have the spot markets, perp markets implementations all ready to go there. And then we would also still be sitting behind some of the old proxy architecture that we've been trying to sort of get out from under. So that's like at the highest level, the sort of strategy with this approach. So right now, Synthetix V2 is deployed on mainnet and Optimism, and the debt pool synthesis makes it such that all of the collateral between the two networks is backing all of the debt on both of the networks. In anticipation of, we'll need to work out the sequencing here, but in anticipation of the migration, we'd like to implement SIP 255, which I believe is already voted on, to burn the fees on the V2 system. And the reason why this is going to be super beneficial for the migration process is that it will automatically distribute those rewards pro rata across the backers of that debt, regardless of whether they're on L1, L2, or V2 or V3. So rather than claiming the fees, you would everyone's C ratios would basically be improved pro rata based on as if they had burned the fees themselves. And then claiming those fees would just involve minting, basically. So that's the first thing to point out here. We'd also like to roll out SIP 237, which I think is in audit now. If not, it's close, to allow stakers to move from V2 to L1 V2 to L2 V2 prior to migrating over to V3. Cool. In the simplest case, we would have a function where a user, a staker, would be able to call migrate. And what this would do is it would transfer their collateral from the V2 system into the V3 system and constitute an equivalent staking position in the V3 system. This staking position would be backing something we're calling the legacy market. It might make more sense if we call it like the legacy markets plural, but it's one contract. In any case, this staking position would be backing this contract, which to the V2 system, the sort of third item in the list on the left, it sort of appears to be one big staker. So from the collateralization and the network health, looking at the collateralization and the network health on the V2 system, when a migration occurs, nothing really changes. The debt and collateral sort of ends up in the V3 system staker, that third item in the diagram there. It effectively just gets added into that. And then the new position is constituted on the V3 side. for liquidations, instead of processing liquidations on the V2 system, the position could be forcibly migrated over to the V3 system and liquidated there, which reduces some complexities. Also notably, the escrow schedule on collateral in the migration process would be carried over. It's called locks in the V3 system, but yeah, that would be written over into the new system. And to incentivize moving over into the V3 system, the idea is we could move the rewards, the inflationary rewards, over to rewards distributors on the V3 system. At minimum, this could just continue following the schedule that the current inflation is being distributed at. We could re-examine this, though, I think also by introducing new types of collateral on V3. There are all sorts of different ways that we could re-examine sort of how the incentives and rewards are structured on V3. But at minimum, we should be able to implement something equivalent or very similar on the V3 system. Generally speaking, like the idea here is that we can have a very seamless and smooth transition over to V3, where the staker experience doesn't change drastically, and everything can sort of remain uninterrupted. And then we can start building on the V3 system without being concerned about the V2 system, and presumably most of the activity. We'll move over to new markets that we can deploy on V3, and we can go from there. We're looking a little further down the line with cross-chain plans, because obviously this will fragment. It sort of breaks the debt pool synthesis. The V2 will remain synthesized using the current system. With V3, we have sort of a superior plan for how to approach cross-chain synthesis. At minimum, depending on how long it takes to get all the pieces together for that, at minimum, we could just recreate a similar approach to the debt pool synthesis just for the Spartan Council pool, which might suffice. There's sort of a timing thing to consider there. Yeah, maybe this is a good place to pause for questions. Yeah,
I have a question. So once users are on V3, right, and they're supporting the legacy spot markets, and let's suppose we launch the new spot markets, what would be the incentive to move from one to the other? Is it the same rewards distribution mechanism that can just be reward people if they're on a different pool with a different amount?
Yeah. So initially, the plan is to hold off on allowing the creation of alternative pools and alternative markets until we're like comfortable with how the migration's rolling out. So the idea is the V3 Spartan Council controlled pool that everyone's migrating into would start off by delegating all of its collateral to the legacy market, which is the sort of aggregated V2 system, and then we could start rolling out new spot markets, and then the Spartan Council pool would start delegating collateral both to the legacy market and to the new spot markets. The inflationary rewards are happening at the pool level, so that wouldn't change. And the rewards from the new spot markets could be burned or sent to a rewards distributor on in the V3 system.
Wonderful, thank you.
Given that there's going to be a moving en masse of escrow positions from V2 to V3, is that information going to be publicly auditable? Given that it potentially provides a means of rewriting escrow, were someone to be maliciously inclined, a level.
Everything's on chain. It's called a lock in the V3 system, and so part of the function that migrates the staking position would look at the escrow on the collateral associated with that account, and then just rewrite the equivalent value into the V3 system.
In and that pulls from L1 and L2 escrow for those who haven't migrated.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're your escrow on L2, like if you're this is going from the left side to the right side of the diagram. So like whatever your escrow is on L2 would get brought over on L2 or L1, same thing.
Well, what about inflationary rewards? Are we going to progressively migrate them towards V3? And how long of a transition do we expect till a majority get onto V3?
Yeah, I think that's a good question and something we can discuss. I think the simplest thing is to just point inflationary rewards at V3 all at once. Maybe we could devise a plan to make that happen progressively. Also, if down the line there are stragglers, we can also set it up where eventually we can forcibly migrate the positions over to V3. I think there's sort of a more like strategic question of like how fast. Like I think there are levers we can pull to make the migration happen faster, or we might want to have levers to pull to make it just a little bit slower, so that we can sort of keep track of what's going on and catch anything unexpected if anything crops up. So, yeah, and I guess maybe there's a question around fairness or something there too. So, yeah, I think that's something that we can discuss. But at minimum, I think the simplest implementation is just moving the inflationary rewards to point to the V3 system.
I'd prefer a slower approach because, you know, users are often surprised by such changes. Maybe people who aren't following it, they have enough time to, you know, migrate progressively.
Right. Yeah. I mean, presumably when you go to claim, you would find out then and click migrate instead. But yeah, I mean, I think more progressive migration is definitely an option if that's preferred.
Thanks.
So another question is, it looks like in B3, we're going to have different tokens for the synths. Eventually, when the new spot market is launched, right? But what happens to SNX?
The SNX token itself would stay the same. I mean, we would need to make an update to the SNX token as far as inflation goes, but otherwise the V3 system is completely collateral agnostic, so it would just treat SNX as any other ERC-20.
Cool.
I just saw the question in the GovCall chat. Yeah, so existing escrow positions get transferred. They'll still be locked in the V3 system on the when they're transferred. There wouldn't be an instant unlock. Yeah. Seeing the question, I'm not sure what dual rewards means here, but escrow. Yeah, so on migration, the escrowed collateral would move over to the V3 system, and then the inflationary rewards would start to. I mean, unless we have another plan, would just be provided to the staking positions in the V3 system.
Hey, sorry, I just want to hop on stage to ask a question, maybe it'd be easier. So like, would that mean that there would be just special logic just for the escrowed rewards first until a year passes, basically? Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, basically. The locking functionality, I mean, maybe down the line we would want to use it for something else, but the locking functionality, would at least under the current plan, no longer have much value after all of those escrowed. After all that escrow collateral is unlocked, it's like fairly minimal logic though. So like I don't like from an implementation standpoint, I think it's fine to have it there. And if it sort of loses its utility down the line, it's not going to be a huge deal.
Okay, I just wanted to mention one other point then. Like, at that point, like, I'm assuming there'll be a change in inflation and or whatever. There'll probably be different, you know, ideas on how much rewards should be streamed. But, like, essentially, there would be, like, a dual system then, right? Like, there would be people who would be unlocking their resting rewards, and then there would be, like, immediately available SNX V3 rewards. So...
Yeah, exactly. The lock is really in the V3 system. The lock is really just like if you try to take the collateral out, it just doesn't let you unless it's based on what the schedule is. So it's like over in the new system, and then there's a separate there'd be like a separate claim step in a rewards distributor for new rewards coming in.
And you're sure that's not going to be too much like complexity over into, you know, like, I don't know, like that sounds like it's extra complexity for no reason, right? Like,
yeah, I see where you're coming from. It's like, it's more like in the code to migrate, it just says, okay, what's the escrow on this? And then it rewrites it into a function that's saying, hey, if you try to pull this out this much out before this date, you can't do it. And that's like one thing. And then the other thing is this abstracted out rewards distributor system, which can handle whatever tokenomics inflation scheme the protocol wants to use, and it sort of operates separately.
And then, of course, there's also the liquidation aspect of those accounts too, right? Like, how would the liquidation for those work?
Yeah, it's a good question. The liquidating locked. Like the lock lives on the account, I believe. So liquidating locked escrowed collateral in the V3 system would effectively unlock it. But at least in the discussions we've had recently, it doesn't feel like that's an attack vector because it's an instantaneous liquidation that's socialized. So it's not like you can use that as a loophole to like unlock your collateral and run away with it or something.
So what are like the liquidation threshold? Like, would it be same as other, as a regular liquidation? Do we still have self-liquidation in V3?
We don't have self-liquidation. And I think we're by default assuming the parameters will stay the same, but that's something that could be discussed further.
Okay. I still think kind of from like a, like just like a complexity perspective, it might be better just to unlock all the rewards at once, and not at once, but like just, you know, shorten that 1 year right down to something more reasonable. But like, I don't know if how much, like, you know, if that might have like a negative speculative impact. So yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be simpler if we just unlocked them all completely immediately, but I think even your suggestion, that's not, maybe not what we want. So, yeah. Again, as far as like the complexities in the system go, like writing this lock over into the new system is not the worst thing. So, yeah, but it's a fair concern.
Sure. Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Doesn't sound like there's any further discussion on that.
I wanted to ask about the conversion between SUSD and SNXUSD. So is it going to be a two-way street, or is it going to be only being able to convert it to SNXUSD?
Yeah, it's that's a good question. We were discussing this earlier. So at minimum, it would be unidirectional, and I think we're under the impression that just through AMMs, there should be sufficient liquidity to trade back and forth if necessary. We're exploring the complexity and going in the reverse direction, and also trying to sort out if that actually would be necessary.
Yeah, because I believe SUSD would be using its utility value. So I'm just wondering if it would have some kind of effect on the stability of the stablecoin.
Yeah. The concern is the peg would break up because there's a lack of there's too much demand for SUSD, right? I mean, maybe a FIFA or a DB can speak to this, but yeah, we'll come back with a more confident response here. But I think if we can support bi-directional without it being too crazy from an implementation standpoint, it's a good idea.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks.
Yeah, the limitation for going bidirectional for the SUSD to SNXUSD is mostly just that there's a limitation on both sides. So you can only buy SNX, you can only turn SUSD into SNXUSD if enough people have migrated to V3, which we expect that will probably be the case pretty quickly, but technically it's a limitation. And that also means that if there's like wrappers remaining on the V2X system, there could be some unconvertible SUSD to SNXUSD for that reason. The other thing to consider is going back the other direction from SNXUSD to SUSD, there has to be enough SUSD sitting inside of the legacy market contract, which had previously been wrapped into SNXUSD. That it can basically send to the user, because based on the design decisions we've taken on the V2X side, we can't just mint more SUSD, even if it would be technically safe. So instead of burning the SUSD upon conversion, it'll just hold it in the contract, and that will allow for people to go back if necessary.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sounds like that's all on 306. Noah, did you want to keep going?
Yeah. I think I sort of covered everything on the migration side. Those are all really, really good questions. I guess we said we were going to go through a couple others, right? What was the what's next up? Sorry. 310.
310.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, this is a quick one. We were discussing that we wanted to have to at least initially only have the Spartan Council pool, no other pools, and only have markets that we're deploying. Just again, in the spirit of having a progressive sort of safer migration. And so we were thinking, okay, we could just add an SCCP flag for turning it on and off, and we realized it would be better to just have a feature flag system, which is like a common thing in software engineering and Web2, that abstracts out having certain functionality be able to be turned on and off by SCCP. So the feature flag would has an allow list. So initially we could say just governance or whatever is able to call certain functions. And then down the line when it's ready to roll, we can just flick on a switch that allows anyone to call a function.
So would we be assuming that all of the feature flags would eventually be turned off, or would there be an assumed leaving of some of them on with specific addresses in place?
It depends on the use case. Like I can imagine a situation where we have something behind feature flag that like governance could it could be used however, I guess is the answer.
So while it would be kind of a teething mechanism during the initial phases of V3, it would be an ongoing have an ongoing practical use.
Yeah, exactly. This is just an abstract. This is almost more of an implementation detail, honestly. But yeah, it's just having a clean abstract system where down the line we could imagine other SIPs being rolled out, and we would just want to initially start them with a feature flag. So instead of just having like a pool creation control system and a market creation system, we can just have a more abstract feature flag system.
No questions on 3.10? Probably the least controversial of all the V3 SIPs, to be honest.
I would hope so.
And if so, we can keep rolling. I do know that 3.07 was on the list. There's the juicy router proxy architecture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I think, Ethernet spoke to this previously, and then we wanted to re-present it because we did a little more work on this. Is that right? This is around the proxy architecture.
Yeah, that's right. There were some changes, I think, that were mentioned on the last presentation, and we said we'd have to present it again.
I think we already talked about those changes. I mean, nothing's changed since then. The main change is that the architecture is now agnostic about satellites, right? It doesn't have any particular mechanism for that.
Have we removed the use of the word satellites? Because I didn't notice it on this read through.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Has the use of the terminology satellites ceased to be? I didn't notice the word used in this version of 3.07.
Yeah. Give me one second. Yeah, so satellites have been replaced by associated systems, right? The difference here is that the associated systems is basically one module that understands what other systems the system connects to, right? And this can be a token, can be an NFT used to manage accounts, where the previous presentation said that we would have something called satellites for those cases where each satellite would have its own module that connects it to the system, right? So this solution simplifies all that, and we now call it associated systems module. Everything else, it's the same, basically. Yes, just going through the SIP right now and seeing if we're mentioning anything else, but no, the core router architecture is exactly the same. We simply improved the way the system built on top of that can connect to other systems. And with the use of Canon, this is greatly simplified because Canon allows for sort of like NPM packages on chain. But that's the only change. Otherwise, it's exactly the same thing that we presented before.
The first time you presented it, I think you linked to a YouTube video of you presenting it on stage in Spanish.
Mm.
Did that ever get Yes. subtitles?
And no, but there's something better, which is a DevCon
a presentation I made in DevCon 6 in English. So I'm going to post the link to everyone right now. That's like the meat of the router architecture, what I describe in that presentation.
Great. Thanks, Ali.
Sure. Something that I am currently working on, it's TBD, but we might have parallel audits, and we have might have a different team still to be determined. There's several teams interested in doing a parallel audit of only the router proxy architecture and our tooling. So while one firm looks at the actual product built on top of it, another one could be looking at the tooling specifically.
Thanks, Ale. Thanks, Noah. Were there any further questions on 307? I think everyone's waiting with bated breath to see the recording of Ale's talk at DevCon.
Yes, almost there.
I can confirm the crowd was suitably impressed and enthusiastic. Doesn't sound like it.
I got it.
So we've kind of
pacing it now.
Finished up. So we finished up for now. I think we've done all the updates. We've talked about liquidations. We've walked through the SIPs. And we've all got an hour of watching to do for Ale's router proxy architecture talk.
It's only 20 minutes.
You got to watch it 3 times to understand it, though.
It actually has understandable narrative, so it shouldn't be that hard to understand.
It's actually brilliant. Well, everyone, unless there's some other topics we wanted to cover, we have finished a little bit earlier than usual, given how many SIPs we've been through. But we can wrap it up and finish it there.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Fox.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. Week.